Bonnie, let me in. Flintstones, that's what we got to have. More Flintstone kind of music. That's just, isn't that just a happy song? On a happy day, riding up in the snow this morning. What a beautiful morning. Oh, my goodness. It was a little bit much. But that's okay. We made it through. That's the important thing. Let's see. We got, before I start on, this is important, and it may be relevant to you and your morning as it stands. Why is there music playing in the background? Did I hit that? No? We got music. Got Peter Gunn going in the background there. Where the heck did that go? Oh, my goodness. I got to find that before we take the next break, huh? All right. Well, we'll deal with it. I've got, 7 minutes to worry about that. Came across a news clip this morning. It's very important. Dealing with annoying people might make you age faster. And I tell you this because it's not too late to change the station. It could, you know, you could still have a good morning. You don't have to necessarily suffer through this. But being as you're here, you're stuck now. No, the dial still works, right? You got a shot if you have to. Snow is on the ground. It's slippery out there. Please be careful if you're out driving around. It's one of those days that we don't want to have anybody have an accident. Oh, there's the missing link right there. Let's get rid of that. Click that one. All right. That hit out there. In case you're wondering, moving day is upon me. And I haven't thought about it because I've been so intensely focused on all the things that had to be done, most of which are done. And now the discussion is Sunday. We start moving stuff. We've been moving stuff in all along, but try not to have too much because it'd be underfoot and it's going to get dusty because Tom makes a lot of dust when he does things. But bedroom's done, floor's in, floor trim's in. Oh, God. Just a couple punch list things. They're not punch list. They're a little more than punch list. So I got to put shelves in the cedar closet in the bedroom. That shouldn't take too long. I've got to do the shower faucet. I've got the plumbing to it. I just haven't installed the faucet yet and of course, the spray part. And the shower enclosure is coming today. I have to put that in. So we will start moving sometime in earnest tomorrow, probably into Monday. And it just smacked me in the face this morning, or maybe it was last. It might have been last night. You get smacked in the face, you kind of lose track. Oh, my God, I've got to move all this junk. Now, in fairness, my wife has been packing for months, basically, and a lot of stuff is in totes. And the totes, you know, moving totes is not a big deal. But then there's all the furniture and the stuff that has some real mass and weight to it. And it just hit me last night. I'm like, oh, God. You know, because I'm always thinking about what's the next thing? Well, the next damn thing is moving it all. And in earnest, focused, not what I've been doing is if I go down the house to do work, I'll take a tote or I'll take a box. What should I take? And she tells me and I take it one at a time, maybe two, maybe three at the most. Well, no. Now we're filling the SUV, filling the pickup truck if it's not snowing, raining. And looking at the advancing weather over the next week, I mean, where is all this weather coming from? We got too much precipitation. But we start tomorrow. In sync with moving, and I'm playing this in between all the other tunes I play, but this one was always in my head. Every time we move, it's the family moving song. And this is ain't leaving my head for the rest of my life. I guarantee you that. Probably my whole family.
The landlord said this morning to me, give me your key, this rent ain't free. I can't live on nothing, you see. Pack up your clothes and skidoo. You, I've been waiting till my bell comes home. He's my honey from the honeycomb. He said that he'd never leave me alone. The small horn in me, cause it's moving day, moving day. Rip the carpet up off the floor. Get on your overcoat and out the door. Because it's moving day. Back out your clothes and get away. If you can't pay your rent, gotta live out in a tent. Because it's moving day.
Okay. And we sing this song. We're moving, and this song is sung every time. Now, it's been 4.5 years since we moved, and 4.5 years ago, we sang this song. I will sing this song again, probably starting today, because I'll be bringing stuff with me, more stuff than I have been. But we're there, you know, so it's is what it is. One of the last things I had to do was... I had done the bedroom and bathroom over on the first floor, and I rewired everything, and I never hooked it up. It you know, there was some concern about, well, there's no lights. There's no power. So I've been running extension cords, and I knew it was going to be a pain in the butt, and I couldn't put it off any longer. Yesterday, I spent between 2 and 3 hours in the basement chasing down wiring, trying to find where to tie things into, how to hook stuff up. Our new service entrance is probably going in next week. I just haven't wanted to concentrate on that because we had, you know, moving stuff to get ready. but if the weather, we get a break in the weather, that'll get done. And then I can get all the new wiring in, all the everything to the new panel, and slowly switch things over. But in the process, I was in the, I was just chasing wires down, and I disconnected some stuff, and the breakers were off, and the kitchen in particular, I disconnected the wiring, I pulled the outlets out, and I was down in the basement trying to see where to hook into things, and there's this piece of Romex, which went up into the wall, which turned out to be the kitchen wall, and it had. I've been thinking about this. Should electrical tape be legal? And I'll explain why. We got to take a break, but before we do, we lost several music legends over the past several months, and I've been remiss in not having them having their music on. So let's play a little catch up on people that wrote some good stuff, sang some good stuff. But I've gone on to their just reward.
Down, doobie-doo, down, down. Comma, comma, down, doobie-doo, down, down. Comma, comma, down, doobie-doo, down, down. Breaking up is hard to do.
You tell me that you're leaving. I can't believe it's true.
Okay, we're back to 819. Neil Sedaka also wrote this it's a great song. Love Will Keep Us Together. I prefer the Spanish version because I know the words. I feel like I understand. I remember Spanish from high school, which I don't. But anyway, good song. You know, he wrote some great stuff. Comma, comma, dow, dooby, doo, dow, dow. What a great line. Anyway, he was a great songwriter, great performer, and we lost him. He was 85, but still too young. Never want to lose folks like that. Phone number is 1-800-966-1039, but we still got a bunch of stuff to cover. Text 601-207-4478. Will not interrupt the flow of, oh my goodness, so much stuff. In this past week, I had a urethane window trim, so I could put shades up, bathroom windows, lower sash. We put a frosted applique, if you will, you know, PVC film, like a tint for windows, for car windows, but it's frosted. We did that in the house we're in now, and it works well. So you can still have daylight come in, but have privacy if you need it. And so that got done. And my wife reported to me this week, yesterday, as a matter of fact, she says, you know, we've replaced four windows, probably out of 35. And she says, my wife is the dust whisperer. She's looking for dust all the time, every day, every waking hour. She says, there's dust coming in the windows. And she's right. The old windows are drafty. You know, you hear the commercials. We'll be putting in more Matthews Brothers windows from our friends at Hammond Lumber. And I'd like to get some more in right away. But, you know, obviously, I have to add up. I've got a thing of invoices and receipts for everything we've done to date. It's been 10 weeks, almost 10 weeks. That we've been on the project, just shy of 10 weeks. And yeah, maybe I'm old and slow, but as a matter of fact, a new video probably going up the next day or so that is kind of up to date within a few days ago. And you'll get to see the latest, which is pretty much move-in condition. Still some odds and ends to do, things that will not slow us down in terms of moving in, door thresholds, things like that. Nothing real critical. It is what it is. We did our last bit of demo this week. There's always something else to demolish. And in the kitchen, which we're not doing right now, but we will be in another, as soon as we move in, I'll be starting in earnest on the kitchen. I was dealing with I was sorting out wiring that was related to the kitchen. I wanted to mention the electrical tape. Electrical tape is not a solution to splicing wires together. I came across that yesterday, and there was it was almost the size of my fist, a piece of Romex that I haven't opened it up. It's in the basement. I tore it out. But it was a piece of Romex, just a big ball of electrical tape. And then it went about a foot and a half down, went up into a wall. It was in the kitchen wall. And it's wrapped with electrical tape where it went up into the floor, into the wall. Like, oh, God. And I'm beginning to think maybe we shouldn't have electrical tape. I'm not sure. You know, most applications, if you need electrical tape, maybe you need to put a box in and do it properly. And I found it in a few spots, and it drives me crazy. One of the junction boxes I got into yesterday, I replaced, had no wire nuts connecting the wires, had electrical tape. And you know, so I just electrical taped out yesterday. I've had it with, you know, I don't use electrical tape for much of anything, except maybe if I have an extension cord and it's got an outer sheath that has got nicked. I'll wrap it with that, but if it looks like it's getting into, if it wires inside the sheath have chafed, it gets cut off, made into shorter extensions, or it goes bye-bye. But anyway, it's just, I've got to put new wiring in. I attacked the kitchen wall with a vengeance yesterday, the old sheetrock that I'll be covering with new sheetrock. I took the sledgehammer and just started beating on it to get all the wires out. Because, you know, I got wires going up in a wall. They're dead, but I don't know if it's a feed line or it's a line. I don't know what it's load line or line. I got to know. So I remove everything, and then we know. And that's what I spent a lot of my time yesterday afternoon doing. Doing the actual hookup wasn't a big deal, but the rest of it was interesting. And it's getting cleaned up. It takes, you know, if for no other reason, if you're a young person and you want to do your own wiring, God bless you. But get some idea what is proper procedure, proper ways to do wiring. Maybe look at a YouTube video. If you've never done it, I mean, if you have no understanding, probably you shouldn't do it. That's what electricians are for. They're worth their money. It's worth paying an electrician as opposed to burning your house down. I knew what I was getting into. And I used to do house inspections. I know funky wiring when I see it. I know amateur wiring when I see it. And God, I've seen some. but anyway, making progress. And it's apparently wire nuts were maybe not a thing. The hardware was new enough, and it was Romex cable, that wire nuts are a thing that you could have gone to. I've seen old wire nuts made out of Bakelite plastic. Now they're PVC. So Bakelite's been around for a long time. So it shouldn't have been an issue to go to a hardware store and buy a package, a little box of wire nuts and do it right. Anyway, I stop. Okay, I'm calmed down. Bathroom drain. I had one bathroom drain to hook up, which was the shower. And the shower, there was a tub drain. We took the tub out, and the shower is not where the tub was. It's a different location. And it's one of those things you just think about a lot. Oh, my God, I got to get 22.5-degree elbows. What do I have to do to hook this up? It all lined up perfectly. It was one of those deals. You think about it for months, for literally I have. And when I went to do it, I did have to go for a 190-degree elbow. I ran out of some fittings, and so I grabbed a bunch, and it's done. So sometimes I guess it's okay to overthink. It's always not a bad thing to overthink things, especially when it comes to mechanical systems. We want to do them right. The kitchen closets. I think the last video we posted. In the kitchen, there are two closets that were pantry-type closets, and that was the last bit of demo that we had to do, is to take those out. So Pete and I attacked those with a vengeance because I didn't want to make that dust once we're all moved in. Closed off the room, took the walls out that we had to take out. In the process... So, and we're going from a closet that's 12 inches deep. We're making it 24 inches deep. We're keeping the facade, which was the door trim and the door, but we're going to line the closet with red cedar because we'll be using it for things other than food. And I'm getting ready, I'm measuring stuff, and I'm getting ready to frame everything up. And I'm looking at the trim, which is all, it's got, 160 years of paint on it. And I'm looking at the back of it where there's no power, where the paint had nicked off in the process of taking it off. And this ain't pine. It looks like walnut. And it's nice looking walnut. It's got 160 years of paint on it. And I made the management decision yesterday. I'm not stripping this now. I don't have time. I can do it later. I'm just going to put it back together. I'm going to paint it. It's not going to hurt anything to do that. And then sometime when I'm feeling spry, we'll strip the paint off of it, see what we got. But I suspect the doors are old pine doors. They're not. I know the doors are not hardwood. The trim is, which is fascinating to me. Anyway, we got to take a break. I mentioned singer-songwriters. We have lost over the past couple of months. The other one, and I've had folks asking me to play something, is Bob Weir, Grateful Dead. One of the few surviving members of the Grateful Dead at this point. But let's get a little bit of Mr. Robert Weir. We'll be right back.
flashing my gears out on Main Street. You took a dry clean right and it's on the same street. Your typical city involved in a typical daydream. Hang it up and see what tomorrow brings.
That yeah, what a great song, huh? Grateful Dead, Bob Weir singing Hell in a Bucket. I had that on my answering machine back in the day. What can I say? It was a different time, for me at least. Let's see. I got a text message. Very good point. Tom, you'll need tape to pull replacement wire into place. True. So we'll use it for that. And I accept that. I just don't think it. I've seen too much in the past 24 hours. You know, it's funny because there was in the process of doing this, there was a junction box I tied some stuff into, and there was a jump to go to an outlet. And I thought, well, most of the outlets in this house are metal boxes, and they're old, they don't fit well, and they're loose. The outlets themselves are kind of sloppy and loose fitting, you know. So I said, okay, going to put in a new box, going to put new wire and a new outlet. So I did that in the process of doing stuff yesterday. The hole already drilled in the floor, and I'm in the basement, and I got a piece of Romex. I poke it up in the hole in the floor in the basement. I go upstairs and I look at the hole in the wall where the outlet is or the box would go. There's the wire. I didn't have to fish it. It was great. Life doesn't work like that very often, especially when it comes to wiring old houses. But it was nice. I haven't fished anything in a long time. I've had pretty decent straight shots. That's going to change pretty quickly here when I get into the kitchen. I've got new wiring going in for the overhead lights. And then, of course, I don't think I'll have to fish for the walls. I just have to get the little maul I've got and beat holes in the old sheetrock so I can run the new wiring. So I'm looking. Am I looking forward to that? I'm not sure. We'll see. So I've been doing touch-up and more touch-up and painting trim. One of the things I did, the two downstairs, well, no, all three rooms I've done over, two bathrooms and the bedroom, are a shade over 8 feet high. And I've got new drywall in, I've got foam, and I got maybe inch and a half gap at the ceiling. And so what I did was put the foam up, I foamed the gap, which is easy enough to do. And then I put the drywall up, recognizing I've got this inch and a half gap, and I've got to cover that. I'll cover it with trim, right? So, you know, and I've used a lot of different moldings and stuff. And I've installed crown molding. It's a pain in the butt. I'll do it if I need to. But I came up with an idea, and I think it looks good. And you can see it on the videos on YouTube. It's Hot and Cold Television, if you're not familiar with our YouTube channel, where we have most everything. We show everything that we've been up to, or at least a glimpse of it. But I had this gap. And what I wound up using was colonial door trim. It's 2.5 inches tall. And it's obviously mounted vertically. And it's got a nice detail. It's akin, a little bit at least, to crown molding. But it's a lot simpler to install. Simple miter cuts on the corners. And then when the simple miter cuts don't work, when they don't line up because the walls aren't square for whatever reason, because it's an old house, it's already primed white. And then we take some white caulk and we caulk everything. And so we've got a glued up ceiling tile that looks like a tin ceiling, which I can't say enough good things about, because the bedroom that we did had the square cellulose tiles, 1 foot square tiles, probably put up in the 50s. And God knows I didn't want to do drywall on the ceiling. So I found these tiles. I had used them before, but it was probably 20 years ago. And I wasn't happy with the adhesive working well. And what I wound up using now, and I checked videos and I checked manufacturer, they suggested Loctite Power Grab construction adhesive. And it sticks really well. You have to use a reasonable bit of it, distribute it. And we were doing 2-foot by 4-foot sheets, and it went up well. So Pete and I did all the big sheets of it last Friday. And then over last weekend, I had all the trim pieces to do around the whole perimeter of the room. Did those in really no time. I just took a scissors to trim it. You know, obviously you measure it and put it up. And it went quick. So, and I hadn't done the ceiling in the bathroom. And the bathroom is this very small downstairs bathroom, very small room. And these are 2-foot by 4-foot pieces. And I found doing it by myself, it was a little unwieldy because it's just a floppy piece of plastic. It's embossed, but it's still floppy. But after Pete and I had done it, I said, well, let me just see. I'll get in the bathroom. The bathroom is 5 feet wide. It's a small room. So let me see what I can do. So I snapped chalk line trying to figure out where to place things and caulked it and came up with the routine, which is to drape the sheet over my head. So I can start on one edge, get it on the chalk line, and then just holding it up, you know, as I'm sticking it, work my way down the whole sheet. And it was done in no time. You know, it's not a big room. It was 9 feet by 5 feet, something like that, with a little jog. And they got that done. And then, my wife was waiting for me to leave. You know, it was the end of the day. We're going to go home. I said, just give me 10 more minutes. And I had the whole room done. And then on Monday, they said, well, you know, this was so successful. I had the upstairs bathroom. The ceiling wasn't as bad, but it had some cracks in it. There were solid cracks, and I could have cleaned them up, you know, put joint compound on them or spackle or something. I said, you know what? I've got enough. I ordered enough tile to do it. Let's do it. And that was an 8x8 room. And again, banged out in no time. So we're going to do the kitchen with the same ceiling, a different style, excuse me, but I'm using a 2-foot square tile instead of 2x4. So for one person doing it by themselves, which is basically me, it should go fast. It'd be a lot easier to handle. And there was no swearing involved. I mean, I think that's always a positive. I'm trying to improve my cultural whatever. Tom, how high above grade does PVC conduit box need to be on an exterior wall? I don't know. I've had some pretty close to grade. When I install them, I usually have them up about 4 feet. And it is subconscious, but it's up off the ground. It's away from probably most snow. And I don't have to bend over to plug things in. When did that become a thing? You're gauging your ability to not hurt yourself. Speaking of which, I am hurting today. I'm just, you know, it's been a long week. I'm glad the flooring is done for now. I still got to do the kitchen, and then we're going to do the living room. Oh, God. One of the things, being down in the basement yesterday, we cleaned up a lot of stuff. This is a 160-year-old house, 165-year-old house, 166-year-old house, excuse me. We got rid of a lot of stuff, junk that was in the basement, garbage, basically. And there was a lot we didn't move. Because I think we were doing it the day before they were coming. And actually, I had cut a hole to get stuff outside, and I filled up the area where it was under a deck. So I sealed the hole up for security reasons, and the rest that's there has to come out. And I'm looking at this. I'm like, well, you know, I could do a little bit at a time. And the plan I do have a plan here. It's I can stand up in parts of the basement. It's old rock mortar. It's dirt floor. And I've always suggested to people, nobody's ever done it, so I guess I'm going to be the first one to do it, is if I did a 5-gallon bucket a day, I would probably do more than one bucket because, you know, if you're doing this, let's get it done. But dig out those areas where it's a little bit, where the floor is a little too high. And they excavated around with a new boiler. Excuse me, went in a couple years ago. And I'd like to get to that level, which is an area where I can stand up. And although I've shrunk with age, it's still a little over 6 feet. So that's an ideal number for a basement, at least. One of the catches is when you do something like that, you need to reinforce the footings around the rock mortar wall. So that would be a fun project. But, you know, got to have something to do in the wintertime. And I think I've mentioned it. It bears mentioning again. You know, we had the basement spray foamed. And the basement this is when it was cold out. Basement temperature went up about 10 degrees from day to day. Similar weather both days. And it was cold. So, excuse me, it has worked out well. But I think there'll be some digging involved when that time comes. When, you know, when I'm bored, I got nothing to do. That'd be a fun project. The electrical service is going in next week. I've been putting off my electrician. He's got all the materials. And we'll talk today and pick a day when the weather looks cooperative. You know, you look at it, the past couple weeks here, we look at the extended weather forecast, and yeah, it's warmer, but we're getting a lot of precipitation. And, it could be done in the wet weather, but obviously it'd be nice to not have that. And I've got to remove some siding. House has old Masonite siding, and that's coming off. We're going back to clapboards and make it look like an old house. Again, a nice old house as opposed to a funky old house, which is what it looks like right now. But in the process of taking the clapboards off where the new service entrance and disconnect are going, I do want to get some foam on that outside wall, so I've got to have a day when it's not raining. What a concept. Take off the old siding and be ready for Stuart, my electrician, to come in and do his magic. And hopefully I don't have to be involved. I've got enough other things to do. But then we'll have a new panel to tie to. I've got arc fault interrupters because I want to torture myself. I'm hoping they don't... nuisance trip, but that's code. That's what we're doing. So we'll see how that goes. We also have been cleaning up. When I do a project like this, when I do any project, there's a myriad of tools and stuff that winds up on site. And really, all of those have taken up residence in the kitchen. And if I'm doing the kitchen over, all those tools cannot stay there. So the staging, which was in the bathroom, in the bedroom for 10 weeks, left the other day. And we have a barn, fortunately. And the barn is now starting to receive all this stuff. The other interesting dilemma is when the house we're in now, that we moved into 4.5 years ago, I built a ton of shelves. Shelf building seems to be in my blood. And I built a whole bunch of shelves in the basement. I got a lot of stuff stored there. Then I've got other shelves for banjo stuff. And all that's got to get moved. I don't have built-in shelves at the new place. They can't go in the basement because it's a rock, mortar, dirt floor. Everything would get soggy and moldy, and so it's got to go in the barn, which is fine. The barn is huge, except the barn's not insulated yet, so the I can't build against the wall. They have to be able to be moved if I'm going to insulate. So that's I'm weighing that. You know, I was looking – so here – and I'll put this out there. I have frequented the Temu site, TEMU.com. for different things, and been kind of interested in what I've seen. One of the things I've looked at is shelving. And then I go to a store like Home Depot where they have, you know, a big shelving aisle and look at that, and there's a price disparity there that is absolutely stunning. I mean, it cannot be ignored to have that. And a lot of the stuff that I see in the box stores is coming from the same place as Temu gets their stuff, and you know where that is. I haven't bit the bullet yet and done it, but I'm probably going to order at least one set to see how it works. But so far, they have not disappointed me, and we'll see. Which reminds me, speaking of box stores, and, you know, we're working with Hammond Lumber a lot with this project. And one thing that was interesting, I had some lumber delivered the other day, and I'm talking to the guy from Hammond Lumber, and I've dealt with several different people who have done deliveries, and I found an interesting thing going on here. I've gotten deliveries from box stores. I've gotten deliveries from local lumber yards, and the local folks are a lot more pleasant to deal with. Now, obviously you need to shop and you want to get a good deal on product, but my experience is a local place like Hammond Lumber, they come to they deliver for me. Usually same day I place the order, and I find these are my neighbors that I deal with for the deliveries. And, you know, he said, well, do you live? The guy knows where I live. I just met him. He looked familiar, but I think I just met him for the first time. He knew where I lived. But then again, probably say, you know who lives up there, that bozo. I appreciate having somebody who at least is friendly and isn't grunting at me. And I've had too many grunt deliveries from box stores. And I, honest to God, and I've noticed the difference. Maybe somebody's having a bad day, but it's very consistent dealing with local companies that are very pleasant experience. They've been very helpful. If I'm not there, I tell them where to leave the stuff, and they'll leave it for me. So, hey, we got to take a break. It's 8:54. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Text line 601-207-4478. I know you're out there making snow angels. I know it. Anyway, we'll be back in a little bit. It is hot and cold. What else? Hot and cold television on the YouTube. Get the kids around after 10 o'clock. You don't do it before 10 o'clock because, you know, you got five, 8 minutes. You could watch one of them. Yeah, you got time. Anyway, we'll be back in a bit.
Carry moonbeams home in a jar and be better off than you are. Or would you rather be a mule? A mule is an animal with long funny ears. He kicks up at anything he hears. His back is brawny and his brain is weak. He's just plain stupid with a stubborn streak. And by the way, if you hate to go to school, you may grow up to be a mule. How would you like...
Francis, I always kind of liked mules. Huh? Hey, it's Hot and Cold Hour number 2. Good morning again. I'm Tom. Moving day is coming up and listening to the weather just thinking, oh, goody, gonna be getting wet. No doubt about it. That's going to bollocks up everything. Oh, well. Is what it is, right? We'll live through it. At least it's not a blizzard. And I looked out the window during the break. The snow has stopped in Bangor, Maine, and things are dripping. So it must be, it was 32 when I came in. So it must be 33 or 34. Gosh, it's almost like springtime. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Text line 601-207-4478. What do we got? I got this text message. It's such a pain in the butt when the phone changes a text. And I'm going to read this verbatim. Looking for an occasional use dress press in the $100 range. Any recommendations? When I have a need for a tool like that, I basically do several things. One is I get online, I'll check the box stores, see what the price is, check Harbor Freight, see what the price is. Harbor Freight in particular, I'd be looking at the reviews because people are pretty candid if they don't like something. And then I also look at eBay. Sometimes a little bit better deal at eBay, but probably one of those three would get you what you're looking for. Let's see. Tom, Natalie McMaster and Donnell Leahy were in Portland this week. They had a great banjo player, Edna Scahill. It was quite a show. Edna. Edna. I'll look up, look I don't know if that's a man's name or a lady's name, but I will look it up during the break. Thank you. Good to know. It's always good to hear there's a banjo player I don't know about. Some stuff came in a couple weeks ago that we ordered. We're planning ahead, trying to keep an eye, you know, on getting things done. And you know, some folks have expressed some dismay that we're moving into a house without a kitchen. Yeah, kind of, but not quite so much. We will have a refrigerator. We'll have a microwave. We'll have a coffee machine. That's not enough. But the kitchen will happen pretty quickly thereafter. I've just ignored the kitchen for the most part. The one thing that we've kind of been planning out is I know it wasn't a dress press, it was the drill press. I'm sorry. I didn't express that part. Yeah, I figured that one out. I didn't think somebody listening to our show wanted a dress press, but my suggestions stand. The countertop. I don't like Formica countertops. They're okay, but you can nick them, you can damage them. The house we're in now, I did what I've done in multiple kitchens over the years. I've made my own countertop with tile, with stone tile in particular. The house we're in now, I used marble. I like marble. Looks pretty. Price was reasonable. One dilemma, and that is marble can get damaged with anything that's acidic, so it'll stain if you drip like pickle juice on it. But the other thing was the particular marble tile I got was not an even thickness. And I was not bedding it in mortar. I was bedding it in silicone caulk. So it's not as quite as flat as, and that was my fault to not do it differently when I saw there was a thickness variation. So lesson learned. Next step is we're going to do another one. And we're going to use tile again. We're using 1 foot square tile. We went back to granite, which is what we've used before with very good success. And the granite tile we ordered online, and it came in about 2 weeks ago. I've got it, came on a pallet, so I just unloaded it with a forklift, put it in the shop. But it's in boxes that's easy to handle, not that many boxes. And once the cabinets are in, we'll put down probably either be Advantech or plywood. I'm not sure which yet. I need to look at costs. And then we'll do the same kind of drill with the, with this time, granite tile. Granite does not suffer the way marble does. It's a more inert stone tile. You could use a ceramic tile, but if you nick it, it's apt to show that it's been nicked. And granite, I think, is probably harder anyway. So, and it was what do we pay? Gosh, six something a square foot. And that's, I was going to do Corian. Corian's about $20 to $30 a square foot. We could do other things. We could get, a full granite counter. But what I like about doing it with tile is I can use neutral cure silicone. I can caulk the joints. I can use it to adhere it to the substrate. And if I mess something up, if I attend to it while I'm doing it, as opposed to saying, oh, no, that's okay. It's not quite flat. I'll straighten that out later. That ain't happening. If I make a mistake or I break something, I can take a piece out and replace it. So, and knowing my limitations, knowing my skill level, excuse me, it works well. And, I picked up I was at an auction somewhere, and they had a not cheap, but a mid-range Ryobi wet saw, tile saw. I paid like $20 for it if I paid that much. It was brand new. And I've used it endlessly in any number of projects. And it's not as good as a real high-end one. You know, you get wet doing it. You get sprayed by water. But depending on how you use it. But it ain't bad, and it works for my use. I don't do huge projects. So it's kind of looking forward to it. It's going to look nice, too. That helps. Got a text message here. Good morning, Tom. Could you please give a mini lesson on GFIs? There's two different things, technically three. A GFI is a ground fault interrupter. Ground fault interrupter has been around for 50 years. It's been that long. I remember my wife's uncle was a electrical inspector down in New Jersey, and he told me, if this guy was your electrical inspector, everything was going to be done right. I mean, he was straight as an arrow. As it should be. Electricity is not something to screw with. He said that when they introduced the ground fault interrupter, the guy who invented the ground fault interrupter, to do the demo, to prove the concept worked, had his daughter in a swimming pool. And this is the God's honest truth. I'm verbatim. This is what he told me. Little girl's in the swimming pool. He takes a toaster plugged into a GFI and throws it into the pool where his daughter is. And the GFI tripped. His daughter was fine. And ground fault interrupter senses that there is a ground fault. There's a fault in the hot side of the system going to ground and interrupts the flow of electricity before anybody can be hurt. Sometimes they can nuisance trip. It's well worth dealing with the nuisance trip as opposed to having somebody die. So by code, ground fault interrupters are in wet places, bathrooms, kitchens, swimming pool hookup, pump usually I think is on a GFI. And there's two forms of ground fault interrupters. There's the kind that would be in the panel, and there's the kind that would wall mount that would be, so if you're bringing a feed, say, into a bathroom, first outlet has a ground fault outlet, and then everything downstream from that in that bathroom will have that will be covered by that same ground fault interrupter. There's other things, too, other kinds of interrupters. Let's talk about that after we take a break here. It is hot and cold. It is Saturday morning. It's 9:16. Oh, my goodness.
Oh,
Okay, we're back. 9:21. It is hot and cold Saturday morning. Green sky, bluegrass. Money for nothing. Dire Straits. You knew that. That's a good song. Great cover, too. Let's see. Text message here. Washers and dryers should or shouldn't have their own GFIs. Good question. Dryers, no. Washers, I don't think they do need to have a GFI. I'm not the expert on that. That's a Google search thing, but I don't think it's necessary. The other device that's out there that has come into play is an arc fault interrupter. A little bit different animal, but that's also sensing something not right in the wiring system. And that would be an electrical arc where, let's say for the sake of discussion, you've got a lamp. You know, you got a lamp cord plugged into an outlet, and somebody takes their machete out and hits the line cord, and it shorts. And that spark that you get is an arc. When the arc fault interrupter senses a spark, it interrupts the circuit. Arc fault interrupter, particularly important, if somebody has any electrical appliance malfunction, especially in a place where people are asleep and not there watching the thing arc or not hitting it with the machete themselves, it will automatically shut the power off and hopefully prevent a fire. So that's and I believe that's required on all circuits. Certainly all outlet circuits in the house. And I'm not up on all the electrical code, but I do know that's a requirement. And we'll be doing that, excuse me, with our new panel. I've already got the breakers. You can get a combination arc fault, ground fault breaker, which I have for one of the bathrooms. The other one I have I have an inline one. And that's that. Now, they're more expensive. The breakers are more. So a standard breaker, let's say for the sake of discussion, it's $10. A ground fault breaker is probably about $30. I would say an arc fault is more, maybe $40, $30. I don't remember all the prices, but they're more money. But there's an additional layer of safety there as well. Let's see. Tom, this is a long one. Tom, I saw a YouTube short this week. Guy had a half-inch, one-inch, inch-and-a-half foam on his foundation wall. Took a reading with his digital thermometer. There was maybe a 2 to 3 degree temperature difference from half-inch to 1.5-inch. Got me to thinking I'm renovating a house to rent. I've gone great lengths to insulate Zip System R on the outside. excuse me. 9-inch walls with Rockwell R60 in the ceiling. Is there a point where you won't get a return putting in so much insulation? Curious on your thoughts. I know you're big on insulating. Yes, I am big on insulating. There's a diminishing returns for sure. The thing is, you're doing it one time. And there is a threshold you need to be at. The catch here is, it's not just the payback or cost, the diminishing returns from a energy usage point of view. The other part of this equation is condensation in the wall cavity. So the ideal, and not everybody does this, but the ideal is that on the outside of the building, outside the thermal, let's assume you've insulated the wall cavity with whatever. It's something fluffy. Rock wool, fiberglass, even cellulose, denim, anything that's fluffy that air can pass through. There's going to be some movement of air through that wall cavity. And it's going to hit the outside surface or the inside surface of your outside wall. So you've got OSB, you've got plywood, you've got boards on the outside of the building. There's going to be some condensation forming as warm, moist air, household air. Warm air holds a lot of moisture or can. That migrates out through the wall, and if it can't get out, it'll condense on that cold surface when it's, 5 degrees out and will freeze or get wet. So the critical factor here is that the wall cavity, especially, again, if you're using fluffy insulation where air can pass through, should be R10 or higher. The outside insulation should be R10 or higher, and all the joints sealed. Excuse me. If you put R10 there and you got big gaps, you're still going to have cold surface. So it's critical to seal all those joints. R10 or higher maintains the wall cavity above the dew point, so the humidity, the moisture in the air, does not condense out on that inside surface of the outside of the building. Now, the other option is not to have any foam there and have a permeable membrane that allows moisture to escape. From my point of view, put the R10 up and be happy. And we will discuss insulating more. I've got a 1,500 square foot barn with no insulation, and I've got to insulate that. And I'm weighing my options. And it's obviously a fine, as you've seen, you've done everything right here. It's a financial consideration. For me, the other consideration is if I'm insulating it, or even if I wasn't insulating it, if I was paying somebody to insulate it, do I want to use rock wool, fiberglass, or something that I find non-irritating from a physical contact point of view, not necessarily a mental point of view? The one I'm leaning towards right now, 9:28 Saturday morning, is the Timber HP wood fiber insulation made here in Maine. Price is competitive. It doesn't itch. It can be a little dusty installing it, but it's not bad. And I think that's what I'm going to wind up using. I've got 2x6 cavities, and I've got staging, and I got Pete. So I think Pete and I can knock it off in a day or so. That may be what we do. That's not a promise yet. I have to tell you, it's been cold in there. I've been cutting some wood out there where I'm cutting 4x8 sheets and stuff. I'm doing it out in the garage. And it's cold. When it's cold out, it's cold in there. I went out there that whatever day that was, it was 62 degrees down where I live. And it was like heaven because the roof got hot. That second floor in particular was really comfortable. I thought, oh, man, I could live out here. But it needs to be insulated. And I've got all my banjo stuff going out there. So that's a big deal. Do you have a recommended heat pump? I have an older one I'm looking to upgrade. I don't. It depends. I was just looking at some Chinese branded. I mean, they're all made in China. So I've been looking at, I got one at Home Depot by a company called Costway. And I signed up. I registered the heat pump with them. I put it in myself. It was $700. It was 12,000 BTU, and it does a great job. I can turn it on remotely. I can monitor what the temperature's doing if I am not there. I signed up, registered it with them, and I get endless emails for everything else they sell. Costway is a marketing company like Temu, Amazon, and everybody else. So I get endless emails for all kinds of crazy stuff. I think they're all very similar. I'd probably want to be dealing with an inverter heat pump. And if it's a DIY, one of the reasons I went with the Home Depot one was that they're there. If I have a problem, I'm going to go bang my shoe on somebody's desk. So anyway, we're working on the house. My wife says, can we have some music playing or something? It gets kind of boring just banging around in there. So, I have a little Bluetooth thing, and I have set my phone there. And all of a sudden, the Tuesday morning dance party started up when this came on the machine. And what better thing to do as you're getting the house ready but to have a little break with some dancing? It is hot and cold. It's a Saturday morning dance party. We'll be right back. All right, we're back. 9:36, hot and cold Saturday morning. We might hear from Pete at some point. I know he's been plowing because we got the snow, and snow and Pete means Pete's going to plow, and that's a good thing. Let's see. I mentioned moving days coming up. It's going to be tomorrow if the weather holds, and Monday when it rains. And, you know, one of the things as I've had these revelations that, oh, my God, I've just kind of mentally not thought much about it, that we got to move all this stuff. And I've joked about all the banjos, but when we moved into the house we're in, which was 4.5 years ago, there were maybe 10, 12 banjos. There's a couple more now. I think there's 25 more. He underlined. And I've got stands that hold multiple instruments, which is good. Except the logistics of moving that many musical instruments is going to be an interesting challenge. I'm not quite sure how that's going to work out, except for one thing that and I'm not even going to play music because he just busts my chops about his music, but we're going to ask Pete about moving banjos. Pete, what about moving banjos?
If you got under 30 of them, it should be pretty easy.
Well, I think we got a couple more than 30.
Couple more than 30.
This is a good Maria
listen,
job.
Listen, it's an election year.
Okay.
I just found that out.
Okay. You're right on
We're
top of this
governor.
Stuff.
All right. Now, yeah. Look, hey, listen. You vote a vote for me, I'll tell you this. You go to the Epstein files and you look up me, you look up Maine, my name doesn't come up. Vote for Pete, not in the Epstein files, and I'll fix health care. I'll
All
make
right.
it cheap. Not free. I can't make it free. That's not right. They're doing work. But I'll make it less expensive than it is.
Okay.
Yep. Let me throw one at you real quick. Okay, so I know somebody who knows somebody that had a brain tumor removed.
Okay.
Okay. What do you think that costs?
Oh, gosh.
Not who you think I'm talking about. What do you think? That's brain surgery. So we're talking, you know, it's going to be a number.
$500,000.
$417,000.
I was close, huh? Wow. Within 10%.
The patient's responsibility for it is $8,000.
Yeah.
Which, if you're covering $409,000 of it, why don't you just cover the extra couple thousand? Now, I feel like it's probably actually costs less than $200,000.
Yeah.
I'm going to say less than $200,000
mm-hmm.
to actually do it. The rest of this is just inflated for the sake of whoever's getting the bill, you know, whether it's some NPO or some federal assistance funding or insurance or whatever like that. But here's the interesting thing. That's 2% of the total bill is what she's responsible for.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's just enough to ruin, like, the next 3 years for you. I know someone else that had their parathyroid gland removed, right? Now, that's in your neck, not in your throat, but it's in your neck, right? That's
mm-hmm.
also that's an ambulatory surgery, walk out. What do you think happened to your parathyroid removed costs?
$175,000.
$25,000.
Huh, that's a deal. What a
her
deal.
Her responsibility for the parathyroid surgery, though, was $6,000.
Huh.
So she's paying 25% of the total cost, but this other one is only paying 2%. What's going on there? What's happening? That's weird. That seems weird to me. I'm not saying either one of them should have to pay, like, some exorbitant amount more or something like that, but something about that isn't right. That needs to be figured out.
You have a lot of healthy friends, don't you?
I know a lot of people that apparently are having surgeries.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you're getting surgery, to that age.
It's kind of an odd duck, though, because it's one of those things where surgeries are usually, like, the one thing that you can go to the doctor for, and they don't just say, well, if it gets worse, come back.
Yeah.
You know, surgery, they're like, okay, we got to do this.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been there for that.
I went off a little bit on that one. The yard, the lot is plowed. The cars are out front.
Yeah. All right.
All of them. I did a March plow. Everybody knows what that is.
Oh,
it's that plow where, like, you just don't do a very good job because you know it's going to be gone in a day.
It'll be
you
gone
don't
today.
Really plow over dirt because it's going to peel up. Yeah,
I'm
it was
curious.
Just enough.
My driveway was fairly clear before the snow today, and I'm going to bet that it'll be clear by tonight.
Yeah, end of the day, this is going to be gone. Yeah. They said 3 to 5. We got, like, maybe 2 inches. Just enough. I'm glad I moved the cars because it was enough that it needed to be plowed. It was kind of wet and heavy, but Jiminy crickets. There's something going on, and I don't even think it's gas prices, but there's something going on with cars where I don't think, truthfully, we're charging enough money. Because just they keep. I'm like, I was down to, like, 4 cars, and then I had 3 cars, and I got a 4th one out, then 1 sold. Now I'm back down to 3, and I've got inquiries on 2 of them.
Yeah.
Like, serious inquiries, you know? I mean, like, what am I missing? Did I miss a memo with car sales all of a sudden?
I don't get it, except that I have seen at auction a lot. You've seen, obviously, you're monitoring this even more than me because I've been busy. A lot of cars are going for retail. They're selling at auction.
Just out of nowhere.
Where they should be wholesale, they should be retail. They're selling for retail prices. And that's frustrating because no BS intended. Our goal is to try to get as affordable a car as we can get for people to buy. And when they're selling for retail, what are you supposed to do?
We generally try to avoid stuff like that just because by the time we get it, whatever needs to be done to it and get it put out. And then of course we've got to make some money on it. Then if we're pushing way over retail, you know, people aren't stupid. They're going to look up the NADA value of these cars before they come in. And then I gotta explain, I'm sorry, this is just what the price is. You know what they're doing? They drove here. They're just going to wait. They're just going to wait for the price to go down. And when the prices do go down, then we're stuck with a bunch of cars we paid too much money for. So it's a weird balancing act with that.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that the marketplaces and many times is tied to buy here, pay here, but we'll finance anybody. And price becomes irrelevant at that point if you're challenged that much that you...
Well, because you're buying a payment instead of buying a price.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Like, and, oh, it's only $500 a month for this 15-year-old car, you know?
Right, yeah. Did I miss a break here, Mike?
You know, it's a weird... Are we supposed to take a... No, I don't think so.
Okay, I'm just checking, I'm looking, yeah. We're okay.
Weird thing about cars selling cars. This is a weird experience I've had in the last week.
Mm.
I have no control over the car after it leaves.
Yeah.
I can't make it run well. I can't make it run badly. I can't make it. Years down the road, I can't define how quickly or slowly something's going to rust. I have zero control over it. And yet, like in the same week, I had somebody call that bought a car 2 years ago that was having a problem with it. Like somehow I made that happen.
You did.
And then also, I had somebody who bought a car. They brought us a cake. Because they love the car so much, and I'm like, I'm not doing anything to denote getting a cake. I didn't wave my wand over this one and make this the good one.
Yeah,
give the cake to Toyota. They made the car.
Yeah,
call them. They're the ones who made the car.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know,
believe me, if I could tell, if I knew which cars were going to be good and which ones weren't, I would be so rich, and I wouldn't even be doing this. I would just buy a bunch of cars for myself that would never give me any problems, and just drive around in them all day. That's how I'd spend my. I'd live in them. I'd sleep in them. Say,
everybody go. That's.
I'd have a bucket in them.
They'd be pointing at you. Go. That's Pete. He knows what car to buy.
That's Pete.
Yeah.
He knows what cars are good. He bought that piece of land and parked a Sienna on it, and he lives in it now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's. You do the best you can do. I mean, I think a lot of times many used car dealers or used car dealers in general get painted with a broad brush, and you know the. You can't, especially in 2026, go around messing with people. People will get online, they're going to badmouth you, and let be known whether you're good or bad. And you do the best you can.
If I were looking at any dealership, not us, you know, let's say you're looking at any other dealership, and they've got, you know, like, let's say 3 or 4 bad reviews or something, I would ask them specifically about those reviews. I'd be like, what was the circumstances of this?
Yeah.
Because, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that you know, sometimes bad reviews aren't warranted, but
yeah.
All right, that's enough cars.
All right.
Well, let me talk about the cars I've got. I got 3 cars. I got a Prius C, 2017 Prius C with like 140 some odd thousand miles on it. That's probably not going to last the week with what gas prices are doing.
Yeah.
I've got a 2017 RAV4 with 180K. I got a guy who's interested in that. I've got I don't remember the year. It's a 2020 all-wheel drive Prius. With like 67,000 miles on it.
Yeah.
That one's a rebuilt title. What happened was it got tapped in the rear. There's crumple points on the horns that hold the bumper on. You know, if you take the plastic cover off, you get the bump. That's where your actual bumper is. You know, and they do it that way so that the plastic bumper gets cracked, and then you got a, and people want a different car. But so the horns needed to be replaced. Everything else was absolutely plumb and level. No problems whatsoever.
And we could show you the old horns.
Nothing.
We can show you the horns that got replaced. They're still there.
That's not that interesting. So at any rate, that's cheaper than it should be because it's a rebuilt title. And yeah, so people love that. And those are the three cars I have right now. I should have some more by the end of next week. Hopefully, provide, you know, I might just have another three. It might just be a different three, but
at the rate we're going.
So that's the car review for the week.
Yeah, it's been a challenge to get cars, we're working on it. We're trying, doing the best we can. We do have some in the pipeline, but not many. So,
let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Looking at the cost of building materials, Advantech is about $20 more than other brands of the same thing.
Mm.
Why?
Because it's more waterproof.
What's so great about Advantech?
It's more waterproof.
I thought maybe the other ones were straight edged and not tongue and groove. But.
Well, the tongue and groove obviously is a factor, but also it's impregnated with a lot of resins to keep it from swelling up the way OSB gets, you know, if it sees any moisture for any short period of time. Advantech doesn't have as significant an issue. You know, a lot of places. I think the material of choice for most subfloors at this point. I used, and I debated about using Advantech versus pressure-treated plywood in the bathroom. And I went with the plywood just because I know that's going to stay relatively inert. And I needed a little bit more structure on that floor that had been hacked by plumbers. I didn't do any more hacking on that floor, but the plumbers from probably 50 and 80 years ago and 100 years ago have just mutilated it. So I put reinforcement where I could, put two layers of plywood screwed together. I did not glue them. I was tempted to glue and screw. But if you've ever had to take apart a floor that's glued and screwed, you will swear at whoever did that, whether you're a church-going person or not, you will invoke many horrible names because it is miserable. So hopefully that never happens because we've done everything perfect. So
periodically I get bored and I start doing math out on building a house, right? And I came out at that's where I get the Advantech price from. Mm. But these were all big box store lumber prices, but I came out at a 16 by 32 on a slab with a 4 foot crawl space, platform construction, and then an 8 foot wall on top of that. I came out at about $50K, start to finish, top to bottom, slab, well, septic, everything's done.
That's pretty cheap. I had sent it to a friend of mine, my friend Jim. I came across somebody posted a thing on Green Building Advisor about building without a slab because of the
I've thought about that a lot.
Embodied cost of the concrete, the embodied cost being the environmental cost. I'm not sure that's a burning concern for me, but what got me was not using concrete. And essentially what he did was use crushed stone that was compacted. And on top of that, and it was elevated off the ground a bit. And I'm not, I wouldn't have done it this way, but he put, I think he used Advantech over the top of the crushed stone. Now, there's probably a vapor barrier there, but Advantech right on top of the crushed stone.
I would think would make more sense.
I can't do that.
Like the sheds, all those shed companies, they do 4x4 pressure-treated skids, and it's exactly that you do a pad of gravel for drainage, and then it just sets on that.
You know, Pete, even the
bottom of that is Advantech, and even that being four inches off the ground, I'm thinking to myself, well, what about moisture vapor up against the Advantech?
It's got to be off the ground more than that. And so the one that I think makes sense is you could build a pressure-treated slab, which is basically like a stud wall, but it's lying on the ground, crushed stone underneath, insulation in that floor joist area, but it's all pressure-treated. And In fact, you could do a crawl space and actually elevate it if you wanted to. But I can't buy the technology of even, I mean, you know, there's potential there that even pressure treated could fail. So you really need to protect the pressure treated from moisture and from leaching out the material that is making it rot resistant. And that's not a big deal. It's not cost prohibitive, but it's something you have to know about. And you have to think about carefully because it has potential for a problem. The other one that I've seen that is not a conventional foundation is building on expanded polystyrene blocks. So maybe it's a foot thick, maybe it's 2 feet thick, 4x8 sheet of expanded polystyrene on the ground. And it's a great substrate. But how do you know that insects will not get into that?
I'm sure critters will burrow into it.
Well, maybe not. But is that, you know, polystyrene and all foams for that matter are pretty soft materials compared to, say, pressure treated anything. And I just have a real issue with that concept being okay. They're doing it, and time will tell the tale. But it just leaves me a little wobbly. We got a couple of text messages here, Pete. Pete didn't even plow by the road. Downright sloppy. Doesn't even look like he's open. You've been criticized.
I ran a couple of strips up in there. You know what happens is as soon as the road gets clear, it becomes difficult to get backed out far enough.
Yeah.
And the way the pavement is, honestly, that little area right in front of the driveway, that will melt in a couple of hours without fail. It always does. So I don't make a big push for getting out into the road and plowing in. Because as soon as Route 1's clear, it's like a parade. You know, everybody's like, I have to go out right now because the snow melted. And this is another reminder. If you're out right now and the roads look wet, that is covered in salt and sand. That's all splashing up underneath your car right now. It's not while it's snowing. It's now.
Yeah.
So, pro tip.
The person.
But, yeah, it's difficult to get out sometimes, so I just leave it.
Yeah. Tom, are there new regulations for code on concrete slabs? I don't know. I don't read.
We don't worry about code out here in Waldo County.
I suspect not, but if there are, it's probably related to insulation, not the actual. I mean. Slab technology is pretty consistent. I don't think it's changed a lot in terms of footings and that sort of thing. I think maybe insulation has changed. I know if you're building on a heated slab, the radiant floor, radiant slab, you need more insulation. By code, you need to have more insulation. But I don't keep up on it the way I should because I'm not a code guy and I'm not a builder. I'm just some schmo who goes in the basement and does stuff.
I'm both of those things.
Man, I had fun yesterday afternoon down in the basement wiring. I don't know if
you know what.
Yeah.
You know what I just thought of is we had a step out in front of the office here because before we got it paved, graded, and paved, like in April, it would just turn into a lake right in front of the office door.
Yeah.
So I built this pressure treated step that was there, and that's out back, and that's just been sitting on the ground.
Hmm.
We ought to take a look at the underside of that and see how that's.
Oh, I'm
looking.
Sure it's fine. Well, the house that I'm moving into, excuse me, that's got pressure treated deck that looks like hell, and pressure treated decks that look like hell. One of the back deck, Pete, where you put that rock where there's a hole. You remember the hole?
I thought you put that rock there.
No, I thought you put the rock there.
I don't know who put somebody sneaking around trying to keep us safe.
Yeah. But there's a hole right where I think the gutter is not working right.
It's run off.
It is run off coming right down onto that deck, and there's a hole probably 5 inches in diameter in pressure-treated lumber. Now, two parts to that.
I think all the gutters are going to need to be redone on that house.
Oh, yeah.
They're all screwed, I think.
We got plenty of time.
That's because the seamless guy with his van. Yeah.
But the so two parts to that. One is the gutter. Is pooched. We knew that. The other is, why did the pressure treated fail? Well, because there was a lot of leaching going on. How do you protect pressure treated?
The pressure.
You paint it. If it's been pressure treated, at some point you paint it, And you have to do that to maintain. Again, we're dealing with a material that's rendering it safe. And we're out of time. I'm just looking at you, so you've got to keep that protected. I got to hit the music machine, or we're going to run out of time here, Pete. Good thing I looked. We're going to get cut off in about 10 seconds. Pete, thank you. Everybody,
all right, bye, everyone.
Be careful out there today. See you next week.
Vote for Pete.
Okay.
D doesn't interest me. Love the life that I lead. I've got a pocket full of miracles. And with a pocket full of miracles.